Good morning. This is Linda with the Pantograph for February 8th, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Dozens Rally in Uptown Protest, Trump's Agenda. A week after more than 1,000 people gathered in Bloomington to protest President Donald Trump's executive order on immigration, more than 100 took their concerns to the U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's office Tuesday in Normal. Constituents from throughout the Taylorville Republicans district gathered at Uptown Circle to rally against Trump's agenda and urge Davis to host a town hall meeting about his support for it. Dozens taped pre-printed copies of a list of demands written as a, quote, while you were out, end quote, message to the front window of Davis's office. His Normal office is open by appointment only. Davis represents, in quotation marks and with parentheses, Davis, end parentheses, represents me, so he should listen to what I have to say and not what Donald Trump wants him to do, end quotation marks, said attendee Randy Pearson of Bloomington. I would like to tell him I disagree with just about everything he is doing. Sharon Chung of Bloomington attended with a cardboard cutout of Davis she calls Flat Rodney. The activist group Action for a Better Tomorrow worked with a champagne printer to make four cutouts with the words, Where's Rodney? Printed on the base, she said. Speaking of town halls, on Champaign's WDWS radio last week, Davis said, quotation, I don't like grandstanding events. I've never done those, end quotations. You call town halls grandstanding? We call them democracy in action, said Lois Kane of Urbana. Ashley Phelps, Davis's communications director, referred to the event Tuesday as purely political and referred questions to the National Republican Congressional Committee, which seeks to get more Republicans elected. If protesters across the nation spent as much time actually trying to work with members of Congress like Rodney Davis, who has always been an independent voice for his district, as they do protesting, they would likely be surprised at what we could accomplish, said Maddie Anderson, South Central Regional Press Secretary for NRCC. Instead, they opt to leave vulgar notes on Congressman Davis's office windows. This act alone should discredit them. No vulgar language was seen in the notes posted Tuesday. They read, We have taken notice that you are increasingly supporting the Trump agenda. This will not make America great again. If you truly want to make America great, you will support our people and Planet First agenda. Second, protest dreamers, parentheses, undocumented immigrants who received amnesty, in parentheses, and keep families together. Third, ensure a strong EPA, no gag order, and ensure clean air and water protections. And I'm sorry, that said ensure clean air and water protections. Next bullet, no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Next bullet, make health care a human right, affordable and accessible to all. Attendees pledged to keep pushing despite the response, We'll be back, they chanted before leaving Davis's doorstep. We've spent a long time trying to get Rodney Davis to speak to us at a public meeting, and we're not going to stop until we get it, said Dawn Dannenbring of Bloomington, who organized the Rally for Illinois People's Action. Attendees heard speeches on the circle before marching to Davis's nearby office. They held signs with messages such as, Trump is not normal, and protest is patriotic. And they participated in chants including, Get up, get down, normal is an immigrant town. Dannenbring said the event was the first in the Twin Cities for IPA's Resist Trump Tuesdays campaign. Another is scheduled for February 14th in Chicago. Next is DeVos ekes out confirmation win as Pence casts historic vote. This is from Washington, D.C. Charter school advocate Betsy DeVos won confirmation as education secretary Tuesday by the slimmest of margins, pushed to approval only by the historic tie-breaking vote of Vice President Mike Pence. She now takes the helm of a department charged with implementing laws affecting the nation's public schools with no direct experience with traditional public schools. Her opponents noted that she has no experience running public schools, nor has she attended one or sent her children to use one. She will also have to address several hot-button issues in higher education, such as rising tuition costs, growing student debt, and the troubled for-profit colleges, which of many have closed down, leaving students with huge loans and without a good education or job prospects. Close attention will be paid to how DeVos deals with sexual assault and freedom of speech on campuses. She will have to make it a priority to reach out to educators and education policymakers to reassure them that she is committed to working to improve education for all students, including the vast majority who attend and will continue to attend traditional public schools, said Martin West, associate professor of education at Harvard University. My view is that she is committed to doing that. In addition to DeVos, Republicans hope to confirm a series of other divisive nominees this week. Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, GOP Republican Tom Price of Georgia as Health Secretary, and financier Steven Mnuchin as Treasury Secretary. Bloomington mayoral candidates. Taxes, streets, biggest concern. Out of Bloomington, taxes and streets are the top concerns of Bloomington residents, according to five candidates running for mayor. Vying in the February 28th primary, which will cut the field to two for the April 4th election, are former radio talk show host Ian Bain, incumbent mayor Terry Renner, seeking a second term, retired Bloomington firefighter Robert Fike, Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Lower, and Ward 8 Alderman Diana Hallman. In speaking with the Pantograph's editorial board Tuesday, the candidates shared their views on taxes, how they would prioritize $400 million worth of infrastructure and capital improvement projects on the city's wish list, steps needed to jumpstart downtown revitalization, and why they should be elected. The number one thing residents are talking about is the streets, said Fike. The mayor has a Streets 2.0 program. Mine is going to be called simply, Let's fix the streets and do it now. Infrastructure is a big part of how people view the city, he said. If they can maintain the infrastructure, businesses are more apt to locate here than somewhere else. Lower said high taxation and infrastructure are also the issues he hears the most complaints about. The city has a streets and sewers repair plan, but it has not been consistently funded, he added. The streets are neglected, and we really need to be putting around $8 million a year consistently, probably for two decades, to catch up to a level we might consider as good, said Lower. Renner, who became mayor in 2013, said neglected streets and sewers were a legacy he inherited as a result of the decisions of many previous mayors and councils. During his tenure, the city has begun to address the problem by increasing by 300% the amount put into street resurfacing the last few years, including a $10 million bond issue in 2013 that was earmarked for street resurfacing over two summers. Hallman said the city's infrastructure needs could be assisted by more economic development. If there are more people paying taxes and businesses paying taxes, it will help defray that, she said. Bain said that in addition to fixing the streets, he wants to lower the sales tax to 6.5% and cut property taxes. City Manager David Hales and others have publicly noted that cutting the sales tax, now at 8.75%, by 2 percentage points would result in a $20 million loss in revenue for the city. Bain said he would lower the city's budget from $207 million to $169 million, but he did not say what specific services and programs he would cut to get to that level. The taxes you talk about were earmarked for streets, or our public safety pensions, said Renner. In 2014, the council added a new 4% amusement tax and a 4% per gallon local motor fuel tax, and those funds were earmarked for streets and sidewalks, Renner and Howman both noted. The city's utility taxes for electricity, gas, water, and telecommunications were also hiked in 2014 to fund public safety pensions. In 2015, the council approved raising the sales tax 1 percentage point from 7.75% to 8.75%. Of the estimated $9.6 million a year the increase generates, $4.8 million is to be used to fund the city's general operations, including public safety. $2.4 million is dedicated to street resurfacing, sidewalks, and infrastructure, and $2.4 million would go to McLean County to help fund local mental health needs. Too many taxes. That is the problem, said Bain. We are nickel and diming our taxpayers to death. Property taxes have frozen in the city, said Renner. The council did agree on that, he said, but we are still the lowest metro area in central Illinois in terms of sales tax rate. We wanted to make sure we had the competitive advantage. There are no free lunches. Streets don't get paid for by themselves, added Renner. Lower and Fike agreed on holding the line on any new taxes or fee increases and stopping city subsidies for what they say are non-essential entertainment venues or services. Today in history, February 8, 2017, the 39th day of 2017, there are 326 days left in the year. On February 8, 1942, during World War II, Japanese forces began invading Singapore, which fell a week later. On this date, in 1587, Mary, Queen of Scots, was beheaded at Fotheringhay Castle in England after she was implicated in a plot to murder her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I. In 1862, the Civil War Battle of Roanoke Island, North Carolina, ended in victory for Union forces led by General Ambrose E. Burnside. In 1910, the Boy Scouts of America was incorporated. In 1915, D.W. Griffith's groundbreaking, as well as controversial, silent movie epic about the Civil War called The Birth of a Nation premiered in Los Angeles under its original title, The Klansman. In 1922, President Warren G. Harding had a radio installed in the White House. In 1937, during the Spanish Civil War, Magella fell to the Nationalist and Italian forces. In 1952, Queen Elizabeth II proclaimed her accession to the British throne following the death of her father, King George VI. In 1968, three college students were killed in a confrontation with highway patrolmen in Orangeburg, South Carolina, during a civil rights protest against a whites-only bowling alley. In 1973, Senate leaders named 7 members to a select committee to investigate the Watergate scandal, including its chairman, Senator Sam J. Ervin, Democrat, North Carolina. In 1989, 144 people were killed when an American-chartered Boeing 707 filled with Italian tourists slammed into a fog-covered mountain in the Azores. In 1922, the 16th Olympic Winter Games opened in Albertville, France. In 1996, in a ceremony at the Library of Congress, President Bill Clinton signed legislation revamping the telecommunications industry, saying it would bring the future to our doorstep. Now the thought for today, children see things very well sometimes, and idealists even better. That was quoted by Lorraine Hansberry, American author and dramatist, who lived 1930 to 1965. Next is the land near auto plant could be a soccer complex. This is from Normal. A new sports complex, including soccer fields, could be built near the border of the Twin Cities, even though the city of Bloomington remains on the sidelines in terms of helping to fund the multi-million-dollar project. Supporters are working on a public-private facility to be built near the former Mitsubishi Motors North America plant in West Normal, said Matt Hawkins, sports marketing manager for the Bloomington Normal Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. The auto plant is now owned by Rivian Automotive, which plans to build electric cars there. The facility would replace community fields on land owned by Central Illinois Regional Airport in East Bloomington. Those fields host Illinois Fusion and Prairie City's Soccer League play, among other events. Community Fields is slated to close at the end of 2017 due to new Federal Aviation Administration guidelines, but the FAA could delay that if the officials have a plan to replace the fields in hand. The idea there really is not to extend the lease for an indefinite number of time, but to bridge the gap between Community Fields and the new facility so folks can continue to play games, Hawkins said. If this proposal was approved sometime in 2017, you're looking at 2019 or 2020 before anything would be up and running. Hawkins said the project started with Dave Stark, who owns land at Interchange City West, just east of the former MMNA at the southeast corner of College Avenue and Wiley Drive, and has hired Peoria real estate agency, the Kim Group, to develop it. We are meeting with the soccer community and other sports associations in the community and the town and the city, said Katie Kim, director of the group. We are really gathering information, needs, and wants. After those meetings are complete, we will put together a final proposal and start to socialize with the two councils, she said. Then Bloomington and Normal can decide how much to spend on the project, if anything. We're shooting to have something by the end of February to then start having the public meetings, Kim said. We would shoot to have something started in building early fall. There could be a tournament held there as early as next spring. To date, Bloomington has balked at funding the complex, which was estimated in 2015 at $14.9 million, and its involvement in the project is strictly to advise. I'm hoping sometime in the near future the council can at least discuss conceptually what's going on, said Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black, who is the city's representative on the CVB. If the council opts to not do anything, that should be a public discussion. Normal still plans to participate, but not at a specific dollar amount, said City Manager Mark Peterson. The council discussed funding a sports complex, including soccer fields, from the proceeds of a 1 cent per dollar sales tax increase that went into effect on January 1, 2016. The sales tax went up by that amount in Bloomington at the same time. Officials have touted the facility, which also could offer space for football, cricket, lacrosse, and rugby, as both a local amenity and an economic development driver. We have a great opportunity with our location and reputation already for hosting regional and national events with venues like Champion Fields, which are the softball facilities in Normal, Hawkins said. We'd have great opportunity to bring more of these things to our community. Illinois Senate discusses budget privately, takes no vote. This is out of Springfield. The Illinois Senate passed another day in Springfield without a vote on its much-anticipated budget compromise. Democrats and Republicans discussed the plan separately in private meetings lasting hours Tuesday, but there were no votes on the plan. Democratic and Republican leaders have been discussing for weeks ways to break a nearly two-year budget stalemate. Chicago Democratic Senate President John Cullerton and Republican leader Christine Redogno of Lamont hoped they had a compromise budget to hoped they had a compromise budget to present shortly after the new year, but they failed twice in January to call it for a vote. The wide-reaching proposal would raise income taxes to tame a multi-billion dollar deficit. It also includes business-friendly changes in law and local property tax freeze that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has insisted on. From the editorial page, titled, Put a Stop to Disregard for the Truth. Sexist, racist, and rude comments have been around forever, but are becoming much more public and much more vile. A Peoria real estate agent was fired after he tweeted a comment to comedian Patton Oswalt making fun of his late wife after Oswalt had posted a political comment the agent disagreed with. Marion County Coroner Troy Cannon shared a meme on Facebook about Muslims' toilet etiquette, according to a story in the Belleville News Democrat. The meme was tied to a recent announcement by Starbucks that it was hiring 10,000 refugees around the world. A writer for NBC's Saturday Night Live was suspended indefinitely after a cruel post on Facebook about Barron Trump, the president's 10-year-old son. A Quad Cities teacher was removed from the classroom after tweeting about women who participated in the recent Women's March on Washington. Thousands of other examples exist, both at the national level and locally, with people who use blogs, comment sections of websites, and various social media sites like Facebook and Twitter to share their hateful rhetoric. The First Amendment allows people to speak what's on their minds. We all have opinions and can share them freely. It's one of the most important parts of our Constitution. But using words carelessly, with wanton cruelty or reckless disregard for the truth, isn't what America or Americans should be about. Every day, our children are learning behaviors from us. They learn to hold open doors, to eat with their mouths closed, to look both ways before they cross the street. They also learn about values and morals, that arguments are won by reasoned and informed discussion, that laws are made to be followed, that facts are black and white. The continued prodding and heckling that initially arose during the presidential campaign is not making America a better place or making us citizens that are emulated by those in other countries. Our divisiveness is growing, spurred by words uttered and typed by complete strangers who find some kind of comfort in spewing hate and hurling personal attacks on others. When we discuss bullying in schools, families say they fully support policies and training that show kids how to treat other students and what's right and wrong. The public supports laws The public supports laws that punish people for crimes committed based on their victim's religion, color, and gender. Why is this recent hatred so different? America has a chance to stop this now and use the lessons to teach children and adults about the right way to have a disagreement, the right way to share an opinion, the right way to live in peace among people and cultures that are different. There is room for disagreement in America. There also is room for differences. We need to celebrate both. And that editorial, that was an editorial. This is How Time Flies 2008. I'm sorry. This is How Time Flies, February 8th, 2017. This is local, 100 years ago, February 8, 1917, Dr. Reinhard Rembe, former Bloomington physician, informs friends that he's returning to the U.S. Lately, he has been a decorated surgeon in the German Army. Meanwhile, a German submarine has sunk the British ocean liner California with loss of life. 75 years ago, February 8, 1942, William Zook has been appointed to the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. The appointment comes through Congressman Leslie Ahrens. Zook lives with his mother, Marguerite Zook, at 111 East Olive Street. She's secretary to the Bloomington City Clerk. 50 years ago, February 8, 1967, State Farm has taken an option on East Side land that may someday be the site of a new building or complex of building. State Farm needs more space in Bloomington, said President Ed Rust. The downtown office building has been full since World War II. And 25 years ago, February 8, 1992, Kempton State Bank is no more. State officials closed it because the bank was insolvent. The property was transferred first to the FDIC and to another bank. It reopened next day as a branch of the Vermilion Valley State Bank, which also has a branch in Column. All right, something more out of the letters to the editor. This is regarding Bloomington Mayor. Written by Joe Strano out of Bloomington. As a city, we have made... Okay, a few letters to the editor, and we're going to read about the Bloomington mayor from Joe Strano out of Bloomington. As a city, we've made much progress in recent years, but there remains a lot to do, and we have missed some opportunities along the way. I've known Diana Hallman for 20-plus years, and am convinced she is the best qualified candidate to lead our city. We need a mayor who actually listens, who has the skills and temperament to forge consensus and trust in our city government, someone who can provide direction and support to city management in implementing the council's vision for the city. Diana, long active in civic organizations and a member of the council, knows our city, its people, strengths, and challenges well. Her professional background, helping organizations, large and small, improve teamwork, communication, and efficiency, provides her with the ideal skill set for the job. Please vote for Diana Hallman in the February 28th primary and help make her our next mayor. Again, that was from Joe Strano of Bloomington. Americans must become informed. Your views. We've just returned from a 5-year odyssey of traveling this great nation. People were wonderful, and though infrastructure is alarmingly fragile in both red and blue states, in red states, roads fell into immediate disrepair. The stars and bars were waved more vigorously than Old Glory, and vast chasms between wealth and poverty have become the status quo. In the shadow of big box churches, an abundance of pawn and gun shops and men-only peep shows dominated the landscape, and billboards advocating the confiscation of wombs based on utter lies littered the highways. Whole generations of Americans have no idea what the nation looked like 40 to 50 years ago, when jobs were plentiful, when a family could exist on one income, when health insurance was cheap and employer-provided. Union busting and corporate greed took this nation down. We have regressed, and if the trend isn't reversed, we can look forward to slave wages, maternal mortality, and without birth control, children dying impoverished. There will be no elderly to worry about. The infirm will die. Whatever your political ideology, you must know that an informed populace is immune to propaganda. Those billboards stay south of the Mason-Dixon line for a reason. The people, not greedy politicians, must guide us into the future. True patriots understand that if something sounds incredible, triple check the sources. Read, follow the moneyed interests attacking our democracy. Fascism is the tyranny our fathers fought and died to save us from. Do not succumb to it. By Cheryl Bresny of Bloomington. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, February 8, 2017. Please stay tuned.